This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
The president's position on the Defense of Marriage Act has been consistent. He has long opposed it as unnecessary and unfair.
It is very different than the position he took during the campaign when he said he did not support same-sex marriage and in fact supported traditional marriage of man and woman.
You know what, man, I got my hope in Jesus Christ, buddy. And when you have hope on hand, you know, you can't be emotional about it. It's part of negotiation with the Cardinals. I have so much respect for this organization.
When we went back to Reform Christianity, we went back to the disciples, the apostles. If you want to go back to the beginning roots of Islam, you got to go back to Muhammad, who was not a peaceful man.
And Derek, the tea guy from Seward, Nebraska, who drives his truck through Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and I rock Issues, etc. the whole way.
Did you know that perhaps one of the most influential thinkers in America today, he's no longer with us, is not an American, but in fact a German philosopher named Friedrich Nietzsche? You've heard the phrase, God is dead. Many people associate that with the 60s. It in fact goes back about 100 years before that to Nietzsche, who simply said, folks, it's time to admit it. God is dead. The corpse is stinking, and we need to go on without him. And he has become, oddly, one of the most influential thinkers, especially among young people today who don't even know his name. From him, we get nihilism and, you guessed it, postmodernism as well. We're going to be talking about the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche on this Friday afternoon, February the 25th. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live. A little bit later in this hour, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That means we've got four Issues Etc. soundbites to play for you, and you get to call and vote. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche, Dr. Hendrik Vandenbergen is assistant professor of philosophy at Providence College in Canada. He's author of a newspaper column, Apologia, and he's written an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Awakening from the Nightmare, A Critical Overview of Friedrich Nietzsche's Philosophy. Dr. Vandenbergen, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. It's nice to be here.
Where would we find Friedrich Nietzsche's ideas alive and well among us today?
Well, I think the ideas of Friedrich Nietzsche are alive and well among us today in our what we call our post or our millennial generation, kind of a postmodern-ish influenced generation that we have today. This is I'm referring to an article that's in the same magazine that my article is in by Mark Sayers, and he refers to Uncle Nietzsche as a the worldview of an influencer of the worldview of the millennial generation, and this would be a generation that sees the universe as basically empty, godless, Christless, and basically you you impose your interpretation onto it and live in accordance with your desires and what satisfies your interests, basically. The contemporary philosopher at University of Cambridge, Simon Blackburn, describes Nietzsche as the patron saint of postmodernism. So I think Nietzsche's philosophy is alive and well, generally speaking, today. So we find him maybe not referred to directly, but I think his ideas are influencing people today.
When he declared God dead, what did Nietzsche mean?
I think there were a couple of things. One thing is that I think in the background he didn't think that God existed, but I think more importantly with his claim God is dead, we've made God irrelevant in our lives. Or he was talking to his generation, and I think that applies to our generation too, where God is kind of a you know, we may say in God we trust on an American coin, say, But in fact, we don't. And so we live as if God doesn't exist. And so God is dead in the sense that God is not, we've not made him relevant to our lives. And I think Nietzsche thinks that God doesn't exist. So the combination of both of those ideas.
I want a little biography of him, if we could. But first, it just strikes me that in that very least, as much as we want to disagree with Nietzsche's thought, he's consistent. Mm-hmm. If God is dead, then all bets are off, and there is nothing but the will to power.
I think Nietzsche is right, and I think he unblinkingly looks at the logical consequences of the death of God. If there is no God, you know, we are basically here. We are our own wills are the ones that we should just satisfy, and those of us who are stronger than others, you know, we should live in accordance with our will to power, make our interpretations fit our aesthetic tastes, our lifestyles, and live in accordance with what we like and what we think is good, and so we can invent our own values. And I think Nietzsche does. He talks about that, where we did basically this without God, we no longer have these democratic kind of values that all people have worth, some kind of intrinsic worth, and equally so. And he basically says we should affirm life. Those of us who are strong and invent our values, go beyond good and evil, go beyond traditional values that have been handed down to us by our society and by church and the like, affirm life and live in accordance with your will to power. He looks unblinkingly at the passing of God, the alleged passing of God, and embraces life. He affirms life without God.
Dr. Van der Breggen, give us a brief biography of Friedrich Nietzsche.
Friedrich Nietzsche lived from 1844 to 1900. His father and his grandfather were Lutheran ministers. His father died when Friedrich was 4 years old. He grew up with his mother, sister, grandmother, and two maiden aunts. He went to a boarding school at age 14. He excelled in classics and religion and German literature. Age 24, Nietzsche was appointed a university professor at the University of Basel, even though he hadn't completed his doctoral dissertation. So he was very smart, and people, his academic peers, thought very highly of him. He resigned at age 34 due to poor health and dislike of university duties. He traveled around Europe seeking a place to restore his health and writing. He wrote prolifically. He had certainly an illness. In 1889, he collapsed on a street in Turin, and for the next 11 years, until his death in 1900, he was insane. There are different views about why he was insane. It's possibly due to a brain disease that was inherited from his father, or his use of a chloral hydrate, which was a drug, a sedative for his ill health, and this was the original diagnosis by doctors in Basil and Jena. He had a syphilitic infection, and so I don't know for sure why he went insane, but it could be a combination of those factors. He was in the asylum, looked after by his mother and then his sister, and then he died in 1900.
Set him in his context, if you would, philosophically, because he is kind of the end of a long equation that was building up. And he just simply, as you say, says, look, if we're headed where I think we're headed in our thoughts and ideas, let's look at the end of the road. Set him in his context, if you would.
Okay. I'll give you just a little bit of a larger background. He fell in love with Greek philosophy, but not with the works of, say, Plato and Socrates. He was very much in love with pre-Socratic Greek culture, and he liked, there was a distinction that he made between the Dionysian and the Apollonian. The Dionysian would be these non-rational forces, strongly instinctual, wild, amoral, creative, healthy, life-affirming, and that the Apollonian forces would be these forces of logical order, stiff sobriety. They would be against life. And so this was sort of at the background. And then he is also influenced by the likes of Immanuel Kant, who made this distinction between the noumenal realm and the phenomenal realm. The noumenal realm is the things, the world in itself, and we have these which we don't know, and we basically just know the phenomenal, which is what gets processed through our categories of the understanding. And so our mind does all this, our brains do this work, filtering work, and so we don't really know the world around us. And then I think he picks something up by Arthur Schopenhauer, who talks about what we do know about the noumenal realm is the will, and the will is this will to power that Nietzsche picks up. For Schopenhauer, he was kind of a depressing kind of philosopher, and he thought that we kind of by our individuality we kind of individuate the will, and then we are the cause of all the strife and the conflict that are occurring, and so we need to get rid of individuality. Nietzsche basically says, well, there is this will to power, and we need to affirm it, as opposed to go down this kind of negative, depressing route that Schopenhauer goes. And so in the end, there is no God. Nietzsche wants to affirm life, but to get rid of all this otherworldly stuff that we inherited from Plato and the like and Christianity, and just affirm life and acknowledge that we just have our interpretations. There is no truth. And we make our interpretations reflect our will to power, whatever satisfies our style, our individual taste, basically.
Well, at the end of that will to power, of course, is Friedrich Nietzsche's Übermensch, his Superman. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2011 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
The listeners to Issues Etc. already have had contact through the program with lecturers who will be in Strasbourg this next summer. Craig Parton, myself, Dr. Minuge, Angus Minuge, Adam Francisco, and these lecturers are people who have defended the faith, who know how to defend the faith, and who are marvelous communicators. And so, if a listener to this program wants to learn how to present the case for Christianity in a secular situation, the 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with us would be an absolutely ideal way to achieve this.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 5th through the 16th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu.
Reading the whole Bible every year is a very good discipline, but woe betide you if you also lose sight of the trees for the sake of the forest. The Bible is about Jesus.
bring on the Châteauneuf du Pape. That was a 1964 Châteauneuf du Pape, and absolutely memorable. I can taste it today.
You know what, man? I got my hope in Jesus Christ, buddy. And when you have hope on hand, you know, you can't be emotional about it.
Preachers, prophets of today, can't be afraid of any kind of civil repercussions for anything. We have to speak and speak with boldness and confidence, knowing that it's the Lord's word anyway. What can man do to us?
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. You get to listen to them, and then you get to vote and pick the Issues Etc. soundbite for this week, live this Friday, February the 25th. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. You can vote via email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Or you can vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week now or when we start it at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the meantime, we're talking about the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. Dr. Hendrik Vanderbreggen is our guest. He's assistant professor of philosophy at Providence College in Canada, author of the newspaper column Apologia, and author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Awakening from the Nightmare, a critical overview of Friedrich Nietzsche's philosophy. Before the break, Dr. Vanderbreggen, you were talking about the will to power. At the end of that will to power is what Nietzsche called the Übermensch, the Superman. Who is this?
The Übermensch, the Superman, the Overman, this is someone who goes beyond traditional values, recognizes the passing of God, and invents, is brave enough to invent his or her own values and live in accordance with them. So you invent these values, and you get rid of traditional values. You go beyond the herd mentality of say, Christian morality, which, you know, blessed are the weak, that kind of stuff. So the Uberman is someone who unflinchingly looks at this and is strong and will stand up and affirm life, even though ultimately it isn't meaningful. There is no God, but you will give it meaning by the style in which you live it, and your taste and your decision to live life, to affirm it. He has this this test. It's called the doctrine of eternal recurrence, and it's a measure of judging one's psychological strength or mental health. If the world is all that there is, and it's been around forever and ever, things will just basically repeat themselves. There's this endless recycling. He's kind of setting this out as a thought experiment, and if you can embrace the fact that you will. The life that you live will occur again and again and again, and you can embrace that, then you are one of the stronger ones.
What do you think Nietzsche would make of kind of the breezy nihilism of the, especially the American generation that you mentioned before? It's not the cold, unflinching look into the abyss. It's kind of standing at the edge like a tourist, you know, tossing coins into the abyss.
Yeah.
What would he make of that?
I think the little bit that I know of Nietzsche personally, from what I gather from reading him, is that I think that he would see it as a herd. And he has kind of this distaste for anything that's kind of conventional and herd-like. And we're basically, we have a new herd out there, and people are kind of following the herd. And he would encourage us to different from the herd and to not be conventional and to be brave and stand out from that. So there's kind of a mixed message. You know, you, in one way, you try to get rid of convention and traditional values, but then if you all do, then you're sort of back in this herd kind of situation. I think an interesting and important point that should be mentioned about Nietzsche is often there's a connection made between Nietzsche and the likes of Hitler and the like. And I think that it needs to be said that Nietzsche is not anti-Semitic in any kind of personal sense, and it was his sister Elizabeth who put together some of his works when Nietzsche was insane and when he died, and kind of put an anti-Semitic spin to it. Now, having said that, I think that personally Nietzsche was anti-Semitic. But I think his philosophy would continue to move on. If you emphasize this getting rid of the personal or the traditional values, then it seems to me that someone could be on, call it the Nietzschean school bus, and keep rolling, even though Nietzsche might say, I don't like the direction it's going. But his philosophy would justify that. If you get rid of traditional value, God's, you know, objective moral values that are real, you could end up with an Übermensch that picks up on the, you know, the Hitler view. Nietzsche also didn't like the state, but at the same time, he has nothing really to say in his philosophy against that because, well, his view says basically, you know, gives a stamp of approval on the person who is strong and willing to dare and invent his own values and live in accordance with them. So he may not like some things, and some of his followers may not like some of the directions that Nietzscheans go, but I think his philosophy justifies it.
Is it fair to say that Nietzsche was warning us? I mean, as much as we disagree with his conclusions or even his presuppositions, when I read him, it sounds like he's warning us.
I think you're right. He's kind of he's saying, well, these are the consequences, the logical consequences of getting rid of God and getting rid of you know, objective moral value and getting rid of knowledge of truth. We just have perspectives and we have the individual will to power. And these would be the consequences of it. So I think he is, in a sense, being prophetic, philosophically so. And I think we need to take heed of his message.
In responding to him, Dr. Van der Breggen, you uh-huh. say we need to realize that his framework for the world and for truth is self-refuting. What do you mean?
Well, he denies truth, and he basically sets out this this perspective only view, or just interpretation only view, This is a fairly typical problem for philosophers when they set out a view that basically undermines itself. Like he's saying that this we have perspectives only, and there is no truth. But we need to just stop and say, well, is that a truth claim that you're making there? And so there's this for it to get traction requires truth, which is being denied. And so there's a self-defeating element to that. I think that happens a lot in any kind of philosophy that tries to say that we can't know the world, but I'm going to tell you what the world is really like. So this philosophy says we can't know, and yet the philosopher is saying, oh, but I know. And the response should be, well, on the one hand, you're saying that we can't know, so why should we believe you? And then on the other hand, you say you do know, so if you can know, then I should be able to know too. And so there's this this self-defeating view. Some more contemporary views would be something someone who's telling us that language cannot communicate accurately. We have to stop and just say, well, wait a minute. Are you communicating something accurately here now? And for that thesis to get off the ground, to get traction, philosophical traction, requires that language communicates accurately, that we can know. And so there's this self-defeatingness that occurs. And I think people who say it's all perspective are assuming a perspective that is somehow all-encompassing, which is ruled out from this view that it's all perspective. So there's a philosophical pit that they're falling into, and I think Nietzsche has fallen into that pit.
With about a minute and a half here, if you would, as we end, Dr. Van der Breggen, mm-hmm. compare and contrast Nietzsche's worldview with a healthy Christian worldview.
Oh, good question. I think I would agree with Nietzsche that we need to affirm life. Like there's some real positives there, that we should master our passions and develop our strengths. And I think God calls us to do that, that life is good, and we need to affirm it, master, have self-control, develop our strengths, our talents. And I think these are admirable ends that Nietzsche calls us to, and we should commend Nietzsche for that sort of thing. But I think in the absence, so this is the positive. In the absence of objective moral standards and the absence of God, I think then we end up with a relativism of some sort, where the strong are the ones who make decisions about what's right and good, and so right and good. Reduced to might, basically. I think Nietzsche, too, and I haven't explored this really clearly in this article or any depth. I was limited by space. But he also, I think, calls us to watch out for you know, our projections onto the world and so call it false gods, that kind of thing, false interpretations. I think that would be a form of idolatry that he warns us against.
Let's take a break. When we come back, one more question for Dr. van der Breggen on the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. If God is not dead but alive, then the world is going to look very different than Nietzsche's vision of it. We'll get his thoughts on that on the other side of the break. Thrivent Financial for Lutherans has several ways that you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating charitable contributions to Lutheran Public Radio. You can do so by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click Donate. There you'll find the Thrivent Financial for Lutherans logo, and clicking that will take you to a page where you have at least two ways to support Lutheran Public Radio and thereby support Issues Etc. Remember, the organization you're supporting is Lutheran Public Radio because Lutheran Public Radio produces Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org, click Donate, and look for the Thrivent Financial for Lutherans logo. Thank you very much for your support. When we come back, we'll conclude our conversation with Dr. Henrik van der Breggen on the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week with you live this Friday afternoon, February the 25th.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Do all people share a common morality? Is natural law an errant teaching of the Roman Catholic Church? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled Natural Law, A Lutheran Reappraisal. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Natural Law by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Natural Law, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What do Americans think of stem cell research?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A Rasmussen Report national telephone survey of likely voters indicates that 67% of American voters are opposed to federal funding of embryonic stem cell research, which destroys a human embryo, while 83% of the respondents who considered themselves pro-life oppose such funding. Only 55% of those who said they are pro-choice supported using taxpayer money for such research. Coming on the heels of a federal judge's ruling against President Obama's executive order authorizing embryonic stem cell research, it appears the momentum is against this destructive procedure.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. In just a few minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week with you on this Friday afternoon. In the meantime, we're concluding our conversation on the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. Very influential thinker, whether you know his name or not. He is the father of nihilism and thereby postmodernism and moral relativism, those things that it's the water in which we now swim in American culture. And it's very difficult to get out of the bloodstream of the way we think as Americans as well. Our guest, Dr. Henrik van der Breggen. Dr. van der Breggen, one more question on Nietzsche's philosophy. To counter it, if God isn't dead, as he said God was, then the world is going to look very different from Nietzsche's vision of it. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, yeah, the world is different than he thinks it is. There is a God, and we can know the world to some extent. Like I just qualify that to say we can know the world fallibly and non-exhaustively. And I think that there is a real reality that we can know to some extent, and this includes a moral reality that he denies. And I think too that we need to look at the world very carefully. He's very this worldly, and I would say yes, we as Christians should be this worldly in the following sense, that we should embrace the reality of the world and know it, and then also realize that the God leaves traces of himself in the world. This would be through natural theology, and then I think ultimately and particularly in Christ, the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, where we have this man who lives this wonderful life and basically claims to be God, the God of the universe described in Scripture, and then gives us this wonderful sign, this real sign, the resurrection, and people testify to having touched it, seen it, and having talked with him. So it's empirical evidence, it's this worldly kind of evidence of this sign that points us to the other world, the world that of God and the biblical worldview. So Christ is certainly I like to think of him as call it the epistemological bridge between this world and the next, and that's where we see the face of God most clearly.
Dr. Hendrik van der Breggen is assistant professor of philosophy at Providence College, author of the newspaper column Apologia, and he's written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled "Awakening from the Nightmare: A Critical Overview of Friedrich Nietzsche's Philosophy." Dr. van der Breggen, thanks for being our guest.
It's my pleasure.